And good afternoon, and welcome to Angel Answers with yours truly, Amy Toy. We have a very special guest, Gary Gavin. This book, this is a phenomenal book. People have to go out and get it. It's called Messages from Margaret for the Year 2012 and Beyond. And we're going to interview him, and he's going to tell us about how this wonderful book came about, and we'll get into that. But before I do that, people can reach me. There's been some issues with about readings. I am changing the website over, angelanswers11.com. If you need to go, there's another website I have, or you can just email me at angelicamy35@gmail.com. I have a Facebook account and a Twitter account, so that's my spiel. So, Gary, welcome. How are you doing today? And thank you for coming on the show. This is an honor. Really, it is.
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me today.
Yes, and you are the author of Messages from Margaret. You have been now working, what, 20 years in this field of, what, you want to call it metaphysics, or I don't know how you want to put that.
I am. I'm the author of Messages from Margaret. I have been doing this kind of work for just about 20 years, actually maybe a little over 20 years. Did not start out as a full-time vocation, and even now I've been doing it, you know, still within the realm of doing other full-time things prior to the book. I think, you know, it's funny, and I'm sure maybe, Amy, you might have gone through this at times, when you first start to open up to other kinds of phenomenon, other any type of a psychic or a spiritual phenomenon, in the beginning it's a really kind of hard thing because there's a lot of self-doubt that's associated with it. So you don't talk with everybody right away in the beginning. You just kind of talk to those people who are maybe your most trusted friends. And it took a little while for me to get to the point to talk to people about the fact that I was actually conversing with an angel, who Margaret is. Margaret is an angel that after a series of experiences that took place in the early 90s. And I have been doing both readings for myself and then for other people, and then started a workshop to teach other people how to get in contact with their guardian angels. And then finally, towards the end of 2010, Margaret asked me if I would channel this book, which is Messages from Margaret, to help people to know that we weren't moving into a time of fear and doom and gloom, but rather a time of tremendous empowerment and hopefulness.
Yes, when I was reading the book, the chapters kind of unfolded. So, Margaret, is she your guardian angel, or what kind of angel? You know, there's different angelic stations, so to speak. There's their archangels, there's principalities, municipalities. Is she your personal guardian angel that came to you, or how did that happen?
She is a personal guardian angel, and she also, not within the book, but in another conversation where we talked about that, I asked her about information about hierarchies of angels. She said that if she were to be placed within a situation of hierarchy, she would be what we would refer to as a virtue, as an angel who has both a guardian capability as well as having a particular skill or a particular gift that she tries to bring to those that she helps. And in this particular sense, her specialty is communication and helping to facilitate the right energy that would allow people to communicate with each other. She has a really interesting thing that she talks about in the book, Amy, when she talks about angels and how angels were created. She talks about the Creator, of course, you know, kind of bursting forth, and the first level of angel of creation being the angels, and then the second level of creation beyond the angels being the souls, and that is what she says that we are. We're part of this huge, massive level of energy, which is the souls, and that we're kind of directly connected by DNA, which she says is an energetic frequency that happens to touch matter so that it can be seen in matter, but that we're actually connected by that DNA to angels that helped with our creation. And those are the angels that we refer to as our guardian angels, and they're our guardians because we're so intricately connected to them. So there's like a consciousness that we share along with, you know, the other beings that they were involved in creating. And that our role was to continue that level of creation by then creating experiences that contain both a mixture of the polarity of light and dark energy so that we could continue to expand creation and continue to expand the light. So kind of complicated stuff, but she manages to explain it in really great down-to-earth ways.
Yes, she did. She broke it down in such great illustrations. You know, like we said, let's talk about the darkness and the light for a minute. I thought that was an interesting spin she talked about. Because some people perceive as evil, you know, or good or bad. I mean, do you think it's really man that labels that? You know, it's, to them, it felt like Kartara was just like dark and light, big deal. You know, it's at least that.
Exactly. Yeah, she says, you know, we kind of ascribe the labels to it as to, you know, and those labels came from as far back as, you know, as the sacred books that we've written and what our beliefs are. And, you know, she says our concept of the original creation, and then there was the dark angel that tempted man in doing bad things. And she says that truly none of that actually happened in the way that it's portrayed, that there are angels of darkness and there are angels of light, and those angels create those experiences, those different polarities, and we perceive those polarities in different things. Like there may be, what she calls darkness is not evil, but it is the further away something moves from the light, and the light being the creator, the more something forgets about its connection to the light. And when you forget about your connection to love, which is the light, that's when you experience all these other experiences that we refer to as darkness. We experience sadness and longing and jealousy and fear and anger and all of those things that you don't experience when you're experiencing overwhelming emotions of love and happiness and joy. So that's actually what occurs as we move further away. So really what the darkness and light are just those dichotomy of experiences. But we make those choices as souls to experience those different things, because as we experience them, we also learn how to overcome them. We learn how to expand the energy of love. If you're a being, I guess the best way to describe it is, and we all know this from being in relationships, you know, it's super easy to love somebody when they're doing everything right. You know, when somebody's doing everything you want them to do, oh my God, how do you not love them? But when they're not, you know, but when they're not doing that thing that you want them to do, or when they tell you no to something, or when you have some kind of a struggle involved, that's when it's harder to love somebody. That's when you have to actually draw upon that light and a depth of something more inside of you to love beyond the, you know, just getting what you want. And that's what she kind of describes, this situation of our own personal growth. It's learning how to be the greatest, you know, greatest presence of love that we can be, and in dealing with this balance of light and dark. So yeah, to her description of it, there is nothing that is a horrible, terrible thing that happens within the darkness, because everything we're going through right now is a very temporary situation anyway. It's our decision to live in a particular incarnation or story, as she would describe it. And then when that's over, this energy that's part of our body right now returns to our overall soul, and we just kind of absorb that information and learn from it and grow from it and expand from it. So it's definitely a different way of looking at darkness and light.
I thought so, too, when I was reading that section. And I like that, you know, I think sometimes we have to go through those dark places, maybe that dark night of the soul or what have you, in order to appreciate the goodness and the light. I think you have to do that in order to, I guess, you also grow. You know, your soul evolves and grows, you know, and I like that. I really like the way she, you know, kind of explained things. And Gary, can we communicate with the angels ourselves, we as humans? Can we, you know, I mean, some people have a religious background and they revere the angels as, you know, being higher than themselves. So can we, all of us, communicate with the angels?
Absolutely. We all have that capability. You know, I went through a lot of different experiences in the very beginning that kind of led me to this. And, Amy, when all of this started for me, I think I was probably more of a skeptic, or at least as much of a skeptic as many other people might be who don't believe in the ability to communicate with otherworldly things. And then I had a really unusual experience happened to me, which kind of made a believer out of me, and that was that my girlfriend and I moved into a house that was just incredibly haunted. And, you know, prior to that experience, I would never have believed it, but then living through it was something where you had no choice but to recognize, whoa, something is going on here, and it's something way beyond, you know, anything that we understood. And we actually learn things that we had to do to try to help to clear that energy out of the house. And it's funny, we consulted a psychologist who, very, very gifted and wonderful psychologist, who also happened to come from a family who, you know, had long-standing kind of psychic abilities. And she was actually the person who helped us to learn what we needed to do to clear that energy from the house. And she said to me at one point toward the end of it, you know, it's important that you're learning this because in the future you're going to be doing this kind of work and it's going to be very important for you to know how to do this and know how to understand different forms of energy. And I thought that was the craziest thing I ever heard, because the last thing you want to hear when you're just finishing getting out of a bad situation of a haunted house is that there's any chance that you might have some form of future communication. I know. I was like, no, thank you. Check, please. I'm done. But as the years went on, actually, one experience after another just kind of kept coming up. And, you know, and I fought them and fought them and fought them and finally, you know, succumbed to it. And that was how I came in contact at one point with my angel, Margaret. And it is interesting because when you talk about people just, you know, talking with angels, that was kind of how it happened for myself and Margaret. There was no ritual that went behind it. There was nothing that was happening. It was actually one day that I was going through, like you said, one of those dark nights of the soul. It was a really, really rough period in my life. And I had been thinking to myself, you know, I wish there was someone I could talk to who wasn't a friend or a family member who had, you know, their own opinions and their own agendas, just somebody who could just help me who wasn't involved with everything but who could kind of give me the big picture. And I closed my eyes and sat on the bed, and I said to this angel out there that I knew was there, if I just knew your name, I would figure out a way to talk to you if I just knew your name, and closed my eyes. And honestly, Amy, I wasn't expecting an answer at that point, but as though there was like a white movie screen in big, bold, black letters, the name Margaret appeared. And I kind of poo-pooed it in the beginning as I thought, oh, what kind of an angel name is Margaret? Like,
Daniel or Nathaniel or those IEL.
Nathaniel, exactly. You know, some kind of celestial sounding name. So I closed my eyes again and said, no, really, what's your name? And I got Margaret again and again and again. And my girlfriend often jokes with me and says, you know, I'm not the kind of person that needs to be hit by a 2x4 more than 30 times. Eventually I'll get it. I started to do a form of communication, and it's called automatic writing. And yeah. I had heard about it prior to that time, and I had never done it because I thought it seemed like kind of a, up to that time, it seemed to me like kind of a goofy idea because, you know, the way I had heard it explained is that you write a letter to this close close friend of yours, somebody who's closer to you than anybody in the world, and then you start a letter back to yourself if you've written it, and just let it flow. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if I write the letter and I write the answer, you know, I mean, I'm going to get all the answers I want to hear. But the fact of the matter was, as I started to write the answer, I started, first of all, with the sentence, "Hello, dear one, and welcome," which is certainly not my writing style. And then it just started to flow. And what was amazing to me was that as I'm writing this letter, she's describing the situations that are going on in my life. And she's describing how, like, 85 to 90% of what I'm going through, I've essentially caused, or at least been the actions that I've taken have brought me to this place in my life, and showing me my level of responsibility for those things. And in a normal situation, if somebody was saying that to me, I would probably have been, you know, a little defensive. But there was no defensiveness in me, because it was almost like it was speaking to my heart and not to, you know, not to my head. And it also kind of gave me a great insight on what was going on in other people's lives. And as I continued doing those letters and started to do them for other people, the same sort of situation happened. And in answer to your question, I wrote Margaret a letter one time. I guess this was several months into this. And I said, you know, Margaret, someone asked me a question yesterday, and I wanted to ask you, like, what was it, you know, about me that, you know, what makes me special that I'm able to talk to you and that other people don't talk to their angels? Like, what is it, you know? And she responded to me in her great sense of humor that I've since gotten to know, there's absolutely nothing special about you. The way we thought was that if people could see that you could do this, they could realize that anyone could do it. which it was funny, and at the same time was exactly the truth, because when I started to teach workshops to teach people how to speak to their own angels, for me, you know, I was still struggling with how I was doing it. So I was kind of really needing to trust whatever information was coming in. And I mean, I've been doing that now since, I guess, the mid-90s. And it's been, you know, thousands of people who have taken those workshops. And virtually everyone, I think I can probably count on one hand the number of people who have come through a workshop that didn't that very day get the name of their angel or a message about their angel. And we have that ability. But you brought up a great point. We've been, over time, we learn from the time we're very young that there are people who are above us, you know, not the angels or things like that, but within our own human state. Like, we think we have to go to a priest, or we have to go to a rabbi, or we have to go to someone else who is a holier person than us in order to have a connection to the Creator, or in order to have a connection to angels. And yet Margaret points out, when you look back in stories of the Bible, it was always, you know, very normal, everyday people that angels appear to, you know. They appear to shepherds. They appear to all kinds of groups. And their message was always constant. Their message was always fear not, and wanting to let people know that we were all intricately, every one of us, regardless of our religion, connected to the Creator, directly connected. And I have found that over time, you know, people have taken workshops, or some people will just, you know, hear a lecture, and then they'll go home and they'll try automatic writing and write me an email back and go, oh my God, I got my angel's name, and I'm writing letters. I can't believe it, you know? So I think more than anything, it's just giving yourself that chance to believe and opening the communication, you know, just being open to try it.
Yeah, that I love that. I really do. And Margaret talks about, you've hit on a good point about religion versus spirituality. You want to explain a little bit about that? Because I thought that was interesting in the book, because I was raised from a diehard Catholic standpoint. Now I've kind of disabused myself of all that stuff.
you and I both, actually. I think we refer to ourselves as born again Catholics. It's funny because she talks about the fact that the chapter I think you're talking about is called One Creator, Many Religions and Always Angels. And she talks about the fact that in every major worldwide religion that exists in the world today, if you go back into the stories behind the creation of the religions, there's always some presence of angels. There may be different names that they're called by, but there is always some existence of angels. And even when you go way back into the Greeks, which actually is the ancient Greeks is where the word angel comes from, and angel meaning messenger. And the Romans actually believed in guardian angels, and you celebrated their day was celebrated the same day as your birth. So it goes back, you know, almost to the dawn of time that they've been there. But what she explains is that angels will come, and they've come throughout all different times in history to people in order to explain to them the connection that mankind has with the Creator, so that we wouldn't lose hope in this experience. Because we come into these bodies, you know, we come into these containers, and we've got this limited understanding, and we forget about who we are, we forget about our connection to our soul. So they came to just remind us of that and to give everybody faith and hope and to let everyone know that you are the same as this race of people or that race of people or that race of people. But clearly if they came and they gave that message in the same way that they would to every people, it wouldn't be trusted because we all have different cultures and different languages. So they tried to come to every different group to give the same message, and it would start out perfectly. The prophets who would get the message would come out and they would tell their message, and then the message would get written down, and then somewhere an organization then would form around the message. And as soon as the organization starts to form, it starts to change the very essence of the message, because then the organization has to say, well, our religion or our belief system is better than that belief system, you know? And, you know, this, if you do things this way, you know, you're not going to be saved. If you're part of that faith, you know, and the whole reason behind that then is to make people want to believe in that particular thing, make people want to follow that particular group. And she does say very clearly, if you are part of any religious teaching that tells you that your religious teaching is the one true way and that everybody else is wrong, then you are, you know, this is just not right. The Creator did not say there is one given religious teaching and, you know, you follow that. So if the purpose of your religion is to feel a closer connection to the Creator and to share fellowship with everybody else who has a similar belief, that's great. And no one should not want to follow that if that's the case. But she gives a great way of getting to understand if religion is helping you or not. She says if the religion that you're following is expansive, in other words, if it's always based on expanding your love for people and not somewhat, you know, not placing blame on people or mistrusting people or in somehow judging people, then it's a very good thing. But if it's repressive, where your religion believes that you are somehow better than other people, or you judge other people, and you restrict the growth of love, then that should kind of be like the litmus test as to whether or not you're practicing, you know, a belief system that the Creator would be supportive of. Since clearly the Creator made this world, and we know that the universe is constantly expanding. So there would be no way to believe that the Creator of a universe that's constantly expanding would be promoting thought that is restrictive and constrictive, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And, you know, there are some religions out there that do that. And, that's pretty sad, but that's, you got to live and learn. And that's really unfortunate. this book talks about, how did this book really come to be about with the 2012? I have a lot of people out there that want to know about the 2012 message. You want to go into that a little bit?
Sure. When Margaret first asked me to write the book, it's actually kind of a funny thing how it happens. I'll do readings for people, and I always know that there's something that's kind of an interesting task that's coming up when I'm about to do a reading, and Margaret will say, Jerry, could I ask you when you're done with this reading if you could shoot me a, send me a letter, or if we could talk afterward, I have something I would like to ask you. Whenever that's coming up, there's usually some interesting kind of a task that she has, but that's what she asked to do with reference to the book, and explain that right now there's such a pervasive level of fear in the world that kind of it goes through everything. I mean, it's going through our economies right now. It's going through our feelings about our leaders and all kinds of other things. And she said there's so much fear that people are feeling that it actually is keeping us from being able to create a positive energy for us to be able to move forward. And there are so many things that are happening so well for that to happen. So she wanted the book to be written to alleviate those fears, to explain to people that there was no need to be living in the level of fear that we are. And one of the first biggest fears that she wanted to get out of the way was the whole concept of the year 2012, because we've been talking about that for years coming up to it, that, there's fears that, 2012 was going to be the end of time, that it would be some kind of an Armageddon. And, we watch natural phenomena that's happening now, and people will say, well, that's what it is. It's end of time is coming, end of time is coming. And she does a lot in the book to kind of dispel the myths of these different things. And one of the first things that she does is to dispel the myth of time. So if you're worried about the year 2012, she explains that time is just such an arbitrary measurement that we have given, whether it was the Mayans who did it or whether it's us who do it or whatever. Had we not made the decision to change time to BC and AD, she says it would currently already be like 2600 or 2700. So right there, we would know that we didn't have to worry about it. But she explains time in a very, very different way. And, time is something that's very fluid. And some great examples of it are like, there are things about time we have become so comfortable about, although they really are miraculous. Like our scientists can look through a telescope and they'll see a star that's dying. Now, and we see these images, we'll see them in magazines. Here's a picture of a star that was dying. And they explain that when we're looking at that image, it may have actually happened 2,000 or 3,000 years before. But by the time the image has reached our eye, we're seeing it right now, but we're seeing something right now that happened a couple of thousand years ago. We talk to people on the phone. Like, I can make a phone call today and speak to someone in Australia who actually is experiencing tomorrow. And I could talk to California, who's three hours behind me, right now from the East Coast. So we bend time all the time in the things that we do, and yet it's kind of hard for us to not be locked into a set system of calendars and thinking, that time is a very linear thing, that works in conjunction with a watch or in conjunction with a calendar. That was the first thing, just to let people know that the year was something they didn't have to worry about. But the fear aspect was even more important to her, because she said if we think about money, for example, you may get a raise at your job, and you feel wonderful, and you think to yourself, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get that car I've been wanting to get. I'm really excited. And you're on your way, driving in your old car to go pick up the car, and you hear on the radio that the new consumer price index didn't work out well, and consumer confidence is down, and And now you start to think to yourself, oh, maybe this isn't the best time to buy the car. Maybe I should sock my money away, you know. So we live in a society where if our experts tell us, uh-oh, you better worry, we worry. And if our experts tell us, hey, it's time to be happy, we're happy, you know. And
yes,
that's the part, we just give away our power so easily. And that is what she really wanted people to learn more than anything. We are such powerful beings, but we give our power away all the time to the people we think are the experts to tell us what we should think, you know, because we're so afraid that we're not smart enough to make those right decisions for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and sometimes, you know, that's why I don't watch the news, or, you know, I had a girlfriend that used to say, oh, well, did you see this on the news? I said, no, why? So I can become fearful, you know? I mean, I don't know about you, but when you hear that, those kind of things, and you're in a very intuitive or very psychic yourself, that brings your inner vibration down quite a bit, if you allow it. You know, so you don't really want to go there and do that.
Yeah, it can. It really can. And while I think it's not a bad thing to be aware of things that are happening, it's sometimes really good to be able to listen to other aspects of things, too. I've started a lot in the car to listen to public radio, because they also cover a ton of different stories that are like positive things that people are doing around the world to change the world. And, you know, or StoryCorps, where it's individuals who do these taped, you know, conversations, which just individuals talking about their lives and the ways that they've overcome, you know, certain adversities, you know. And I agree with you. It's you can just kind of get the life sucked out of you when you listen to the news and it's like one murder after another. Or, I mean, even the weather. I'm amazed now at how sensationalized the weather has become, you know, where I put the weather on to see, you know, if I need an umbrella, and all of a sudden it's like horrific thunderstorms are coming. You know, it sounds like you should be going to your storm basement or something, and then you go outside and it's drizzling. You know,
so I know that over sensationalism, and I joke with my fiance, I'll say they can't predict the weather, let alone the future, you know.
It's true. It's so true. So that's what I think you were meaning is, that's what she was saying was so important. She wanted so much for people to know that there is no reason to fear, and that if as individuals, if we could start to just tap into our own personal power, if we could start to, you know, move aside from that fear a little bit and realize that we really were very powerful beings, but we do have great intuition, and we do have the ability to understand and think for ourselves. And she points out as amazing examples of that. Like if you look at the Arab Spring and the revolution in Tunisia and different things, that, you know, social media was responsible for those things. You know, individual people who posted Twitter postings or would put things on YouTube or different things of that nature, people like that are starting to create this worldwide community. And all of a sudden, here in the United States, we have the opportunity to see what's happening in those countries, and they have the opportunity to see what's happening here. And we're realizing, hey, you know what? Those people aren't just people like us, you know? They don't really care about who is ruling the world. They're not, you know, worried as much about the political ideologies that their government is talking about. They just want to live in peace. They just want to take care of their families and have a good life, you know, just like we do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we are always thinking something else is going on because we have leaders who are giving us reasons why we have to not like this one or not like that one or mistrust this one or that one. So it's a very empowering book when she points out all the different ways that we've already become empowered and how the social networking has given us the ability to really become a worldwide community like never before.
Exactly. And getting into that, Margaret speaks about changing the world by changing your thinking. Can you go into that a little bit more and explain how we as individuals can change the way our thoughts, can influence our external besides our internal?
Sure. The way you think affects your energy, affects the type of energy that you put out. And she uses a really, I think, good example of this, and I think it's such a good down-to-earth one that we can all understand. Everybody in their life has a person that they have known or currently knew who's just like a little bit bigger than life. Like, they have an energy that they walk into a room, and they just kind of light up a room, you know? As soon as they walk in, everybody's so happy to see them. They're like, they have like the gravitational pull of a planet. Everybody just wants to crowd around them. And, you know, when you go by them or when you're talking to them, you kind of feel like your own personal energy is uplifted. Like, you feel better when you're around those people. You feel like you have more energy. And then on the converse of that, there are those people in our lives that have such low energy that, you know, you see their number come up on the caller ID and you're like, oh God, no, I can't talk to them right now. You know, they're just, everything is always so bad in their life. And, you know, you know what I mean. I hear you laughing.
My whole family.
Oh, okay. All right. So you know what I mean. And it's like you see the number come up, and it's almost like the ring gets you tired, like it has a different ring to the phone. And you just know, okay, I can't do that now. I gotta get myself to do a better, you know, frame of mind. And for those people, and it really is kind of sad, but they're going through such a low level of personal energy that, you know, when they're by people, they're actually taking energy from those people without knowing it, you know, because their energy is so low, they need whatever life force they can get from someone else, which is what makes the rest of us then feel so tired when we're around them or so drained. And that's a byproduct of how we think, because if you're thinking in very, you know, again, I'm not using positive or negative in a judgmental term. I'm using it more as an energy here right now. If you're thinking in very positive terms, in very uplifting terms, if your life is filled with gratitude and, you know, each thing that comes into your life you're grateful for, you have a different mindset. And that different mindset lifts your energy. And as your energy starts to lift up to a different vibration, just like that person in the room who's got a really great positive attitude attracts other people to them, you start to attract more of that positive energy to you. And as you attract that energy, it lifts your energy a little more and a little more and a little more. And then you attract more people to you who are like thinking, and you all attract, you know, that positive energy a little more and a little more. And, you know, the converse happens when you're caught up in that negative energy. You normally find that misery loves company. You know, people who are usually going through rough times love hanging out with other people who are going through bad times, and they commiserate all the time and talk about how terrible life is and that just reinforces that energy. So what she talks about is trying to change the way that we think in order to be able to lift our energy. And she offers a couple of really, I think, good ideas as to how to do that. One is what she calls to figure out like a pivotal thought. And that the pivotal thought is, if you've had an experience in your life that no matter when in your life you think about it, it was just such a good experience that to think of that thought just makes you smile. You know, it's one of those times you just felt the best about yourself. It's this great feeling. And you can almost feel that little rush of energy you get. So try to remember that pivotal thought whenever you're going through a rough time. So it sort of short circuits your thinking, you know, to start off with, and puts you in a position where you're having this thought that's upset, and it short circuits it, and you start to think about that other thought then, and you can lift your energy. The other thing she talks about is gratitude, because it's very, very hard to feel unhappy when you have a grateful heart. You know, you can't have a sad thought and a grateful thought occupying the same space. And there's so much that we have to be grateful for, that even people who are going through really rough situations in their life have things they can be grateful for. You know, if your car needs repairs, well, you still have a car. So there are lots of
people
who don't have cars. You know, there are a lot of people out there who don't have homes. Maybe it's not the home that you would really love to have, but you have a roof over your head, you know, and maybe you don't have all the things that your neighbor has, or maybe you have a job that you really don't like that job, but in the meantime, you're bringing home a paycheck every week that's paying for those things. And, you know, she goes into even the most minute details of the things you could start to think about to change your attitude into to having more of a grateful attitude, because that just automatically starts to drive different ways of thinking to you. And the other thing she talks about is a thing that I love, and she actually credits a person here who came up with this teaching thing, but there's a gentleman named Noah St. John who created a system called affirmations. Not affirmations, but afforum, A-F-F-O-R-M. Mm-hmm. And Noah will actually say a story about it, that this was an idea that came to him in the shower one day, as most great ideas come. But he was struggling with the fact that he had been doing affirmations to bring something into his life that just wasn't coming. And in the midst of thinking about that, he thought about something that he had to look up on the computer. And so he was trying to remember that, you know, he got out of the shower to Google this particular thing. And it dawned on him that the problem wasn't what he had been telling his brain through the affirmations. The problem was he'd been asking the wrong questions. And Margaret backs up this concept and says that he was very angelically inspired, because it's not what we tell our minds that creates the energy in our body. It's the questions that we ask our minds. Because our brains act just like Google does in a computer. If you say to yourself, why is there always more month than there is money? Why can't I find Mr. Right? Why is this so bad? Or why can't I do this? Or why can't I do that? Your brain, acting just like Google, searches through your memory and searches through your subconscious mind and searches through your, you know, cellular memory, and comes up with every different situation that's going to reinforce that energy. That's going to say, well, it's because this happened bad, and this happened bad, and this happened bad, and you called yourself a loser one day, and I reinforced that for you too, you know? And that's what your energy reinforces. But
exactly.
His suggestion was, what if you change the question? And you change the question to be, why is it so easy for me to? And then you fill in the blank with what your question is. So rather than saying, why is there always more month than there is money, you would say, why is it so easy for me to always have all the money that I need at the end of the month? And what that does is it actually sets your brain to work searching for the solution to the problem, not just reinforcing that, yep, you got a problem there, yep, you had that same problem last month, and you had it the month before. Now your brain is going, oh, you want a solution? Okay.
Well,
you know what? You're a very talented person, and you could maybe do this part-time because you have this extra talent, so maybe I can kind of try to put you in the right situation where this energy comes in, you know, and you can attract this energy. And, you know, it's funny. I have used that technique myself. I've used it with, well, so many of the readings that I do now for people. Margaret will come up with very specific suggestions as to different systems of affirmations, of ways of people changing their way of thinking. Because it's very hard for us to just go from our belief system to saying, why is it so easy to? But it's not hard for our subconscious mind, because all we're doing is giving our brain a new search, you know. Instead of the negative search, we're giving it the positive search. And then our brain starts to go to work and starts to try to find answers that will reaffirm that. So I love that. That's actually one of my favorite parts of the book, is when she starts towards the end of it to talk about the practical things that people can do to take back their power and to be everything that they came here to be, you know?
Excellent. Yeah, I'm looking this up now. I have affirmations. I was going to do that. And that's really cool. That is, actually, I never thought of it. So I'm going to be looking into that myself, definitely. And also in the book, Margaret talks about how to raise your vibration. How can the average person do that? I mean, there's different techniques that I was very familiar with because I've tried them all. What about the average person that doesn't mm-hmm. know that?
Well, yeah, she talks about different techniques to do it, and some of them, one of the things is that, with the exception of maybe one or two of the techniques, most of them are things that you can actually do yourself. You know, someone can very simply teach you how to do them, or you can go online and learn how to do them. And there are a few different things. One she talks about, the first one is very simple, and growing up Catholic, you and I both were aware of this one, as most religions are, and that is prayer. And so prayer is extremely powerful, but not for the reason necessarily that we would think it is. And what she explains about prayer is that she said, if you look at Old English, the Old English language, when one would say pray, if you were to say, I pray thee, kind sir, what time is it? It's simply meant to ask. And what we're asking for when we pray is for help, some kind of energetic assistance beyond what we can normally do for ourselves at that point. And why she says that's so important is that in the form that we're in our souls, in our lifetime experiences, we are totally driven by free will. We are totally driven by the decisions that we make one day to the next, one moment to the next. And angels do not have the ability to interfere with that. They can support any decision that we make. They can help us to learn to make what might be the best decisions for us. But they can't tell us you should do this or you should do that, you know? So if we ask for help, if we pray for help in a given thing, then they're able to guide us to those particular things. We also have the ability to pray for help for someone else, because that empowers that person's angel to be able to do something to help them as well. Because being that we're all part of this huge collective of souls, if one person is praying for another person, it's a very powerful thing, because that's a huge expression of love. That's, you know, one of the things that we kind of came here for. So prayer is very powerful because it allows us to tap into energy that's much stronger than what we just have here in our bodies. Meditation, she says, is very powerful, and she even goes through a very, very simple meditation that people can do, but is a breathing exercise that just takes, like, you know, 7 seconds breathing in, holding, and breathing out, so that in a minute you can really change. Just in one single minute, you can feel yourself start to change the vibration of your body and it relaxing you. She talks about tapping, which was also called emotional freedom technique. But tapping is something that's very powerful because it's a kind of a combination of our Western talk therapy and tapping on acupressure points in the body. And that actually helps to release cellular memory from your body that holds on to old memories that you no longer need. I saw an amazing testimonial to tapping. There's a great film called The Tapping Solution, and they did a tapping weekend retreat, and the one story that just struck me the most was a guy who had been a Vietnam veteran who had horrible, horrible back pain for years and years and years, and had several surgeries, still was having the back pain. And after this weekend of tapping, he discovered that things that came up for him as he was doing it was all kinds of memories of things that he went through being a soldier in Vietnam, and all the things that he had to do that were so alien to his nature as a person. And he came back holding all of that guilt and all of that energy in his body, and particularly in his back. And when he came through the end of that weekend, his back pain was gone, and it never came back. When they did follow-up things, it just never came back. So it's a great way to access, you know, cellular memory that's trapped in your body. And then she talks about affirmations. She talks about shamanic things like soul retrieval and other techniques that are very simple techniques. Even Reiki, which for a lot of folks out there who might not be familiar with it, Reiki is a form of energy healing that they believe has probably been around since, you know, the days of the Egyptian priests. It was rediscovered in Japan, I think it was at the turn of the century, and now it's become very, very popular and much more commonplace, but it's something that people can be attuned to do on themselves and to do on their loved ones, and it's an amazing form of energy healing. So there are several very practical things that she talks about that people can try, and they can start immediately after they finish reading the book. They can, you know, learn to do different things. They're all very, very inexpensive things to be able to learn. Most are free, but a lot of the other things are just really inexpensive, and you can learn them, and then you've got them, and, you know, and move forward with it. So a lot of great techniques.
Definitely, yes. I was reading, I'm like, I did that. Especially the essential ones. The Reiki, definitely, because I'm a Reiki master. So, you know, it's interesting because Margaret touches on some controversial topics in the book, like sex, politics, and religion. We've talked about religion. But yet,
she,
you know,
does.
She takes on all three. Can you give, yeah, we got a little time. I thought that was interesting about the sex part, about, you know, homosexuality and that. Can you kind of give us a little tidbit of what she channeled to you and what she, her thoughts on that, or what the creator's thoughts
sure.
on that?
Yeah, I kind of said in some of the conversations that I've had with people, Margaret would be amazing at a cocktail party because all the things you're not supposed to talk about, she
yeah,
gets on right away. She has a great chapter that's called Sexuality and the Soul, and she says in it that there are many of us believe that sexuality is a feeling that we feel in our bodies. You know, a lot of people just believe it's something that, you know, you feel in your sexual organs. There are other people who take it a step further, and they think it's kind of a progressive thinking to say that it is something that people feel in their minds, you know, and that sex is more in your mind than it is in your body. She says that, in fact, sexual energy emanates from the soul, and that it is part of your overall creative energy and part of the essence of the soul, and that because of the fact that when we come here and we incarnate in these different forms and in these different stories, we manage to sometimes be in one form more than another particular form, and we also incarnate with, you know, soulmates, soul friends, people that we know on a much deeper level than just this physical experience that we may feel attractions to. So it's very possible that if you have come here and most of the time you've incarnated as a woman, most of the stories that you've been here for, you've been a woman, and then you come here as a man, you kind of come into that form with a predisposition of having feelings and attractions that are not, you know, what you would normally feel in that male form. And in that case, you may feel an attraction to another man, or if you're a woman, you may feel more of an attraction to a woman if you've primarily incarnated in the male form. You also might find yourself, as many people do in the transgender community, feeling, I mean, you've heard these exact words, like you are a prisoner in another body. You know, for men who said, I've always felt like I was a woman who was imprisoned in the man of a body until such time as I was able to change organs in order to be able to feel what felt comfortable, you know? And it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. When I was writing this and channeling this, it was really a very different way of thinking for me. You know, it's like, wow, that's interesting, you know? And I had always had some trouble trying to understand the concept of being gay, if it was, you know, the argument it has been, is it nurture or nature? And she points out in the book and very clearly that when someone is straight, we generally know from a fairly young age who we are attracted to. You know, you know at a fairly young age, and you don't maybe necessarily know it sexually, but you know it just by an attraction level that you like a girl, you know, or you like a boy, or you like whoever you like. You just know that there's this sort of a kinship that starts to be felt at a very young age, and as you're growing up, you feel that attraction. And when someone responds honestly to the level of what their attraction is, she says, this is a healthy expression of the soul. It's not an abomination. It is just someone expressing the truth of what their soul is feeling. It might not be societally correct at that point in time, but it is a person expressing the truth that is in their soul. And she even goes a step further to say, you know, to try not to even cast judgment on those people that might be involved in regular heterosexual relationships who have situations of adultery, because she said, try to imagine for a moment if you incarnate in a time in more than one person that you are very, very close to on a soul level are incarnated within that same period. You might find yourself having this overwhelming attraction to another individual, even though it's not at all the person that you are, you know? And we've all heard those stories. We even know people in our lives who are amazingly good people who wind up having affairs, and you just wonder, like, how did that happen?
Psychic, you know, and you do readings, I hear that a lot. I feel so drawn to this person, yet my husband's sleeping next to me. Okay, you know, and you just kind of have to go beneath the surface and not be judgmental. I was telling a relative of mine, I said, you would not be good at this job because you would be so judgmental. You'd be condemning them right now. You know, so... But, well, Gary, we're running out of time. I'm so sorry. I would love to. This conversation has been wonderful. Where can people find you? Where can they find your book? You know, tell us, you know, where we can find you.
Sure.
You know.
You can find both me at the book at jerrygavin.com. It's jerrygavin.com. And the book is available there. And a really, really exciting thing, actually, that just happened within the last couple of weeks is that Hay House, which is the largest publisher of spiritual and self-help books, actually is going to be publishing Messages from Margaret. And it's going to be coming out under the Hay House label in December. And so right now you can find it online anywhere, and in December you'll actually be able to find it in bookstores all around the world, which I'm so excited about.
Sorry about that. We lost me.
That's okay. I'm so glad to have you back.
Yes, I was like, all of a sudden, I was like all excited. So, yeah, that is a wonderful honor. That's really great. I am so happy for
it
you.
It is. I'm so excited. And by the way, for those people who think affirmations might be silly, one of the affirmations that I have been saying over the course of several months is, why is it so easy for me to become a Hay House author, and out of nowhere it happened? So I really encourage everybody, do those affirmations.
Oh, definitely. Well, it was an honor to have you. I look forward to your next book. I'd love to have you on again. It was a great honor to have you. Thank you so much.
It was great being on the show with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a blessed day. And goodbye, everyone. Next week, we have prayer, actually, what it means and how we can use in our lives. Take care. Bye-bye.